I'd like to call the Monday, March 16th, 2026, regular Borough Assembly meeting to order. And with that, would the clerk please call the roll?
Mayor Lynn?
Here.
Vice Mayor Stanton Gregor?
Here.
Member Martin?
Here.
Member Mucci?
Here.
Member Newman?
Excused.
Member Schwartz?
Here.
Member Valentine?
Here.
Thank you.
We have six members present. We have five here in the room and one on Zoom tonight. And with that comes the voluntary Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
On today's agenda, we have two sets of minutes to approve, and I'll take those one at a time. We have the regular assembly meeting minutes for February 17th, 2026. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Been moved by Member Mucci, seconded by Member Valentine. Any changes? All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay. I'll move on to the second set. The second set is the regular assembly meeting minutes of March 2nd, 2026. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Been moved by Member Valentine, seconded by Member Mucci. Any changes? Okay. Again, hearing none. Voice call, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Our, moving on here. Are there any amendments tonight's agenda? I need to put it, I need a motion to approve tonight's agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Been moved by Member Mucci, seconded by Member Schwartz. Are there any additions or changes? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor of the agenda as it stands, say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Okay. Moving on, public hearings, there are none tonight. Bid awards, under the bid awards, there's one bid award. Main Street Lighting Materials, intent to award. Utility Director Harbor, requests approval to award the Main Street Lighting Materials Project to North Coast in an amount not to exceed $132,101. A memo from Director Harbor with the bidder information from March 6th, 2026 bid opening is attached to the meeting packet. Do I have a motion to approve that award?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Been moved by Member Mucci, seconded by Member Valentine. Discussion. Okay, Member Mucci.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess just to Carl or to Steve. So we are going to replace all the street lights on Main Street from the base to the new globes. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And I saw under the specs there that there's a couple of different fixture options. Are we going to get both of those fixture options? But and how do you decide which ones to put up?
I don't know. There'll be one. And I'll talk to Glow, Liz, Jody. And I'm not sure who all was in the committee that originally selected this design. It was back in like 2015. So.
Yeah, no, they look pretty cool. Flower basket holders, pennant things, and flag things, and Christmas decoration holders. They look pretty cool. All right, thank you.
Okay. Other questions from the assembly? Would the clerk please call a roll on the motion?
Vice Mayor Stanton Gregor?
Yes.
Member Martin?
Yes.
Member Valentine?
Yes.
Member Schwartz?
Yes.
Member Mucci?
Yes.
Mayor Lynn?
Yes. And that passes 6-0. Moving on here, I'm going to move to the next item here as persons to be heard on items related to tonight's agenda. Would anybody like to talk about items related to tonight's agenda? Please come forward, state your name, and you have 5 minutes.
Hi, thank you. Gloria Ann Wallen.
As a member of the committee that picked those lighting fixtures out, thank you so much for passing those. I think we've been working on that about 10 years ago, as Steve said, and they're going to be a really nice piece of Main Street. So appreciate that. I'm standing here today, though, as a long-serving member of PEDC, Petersburg Economic Development Council, and hoping that you will pass Resolution 2026-04, extending the Petersburg Economic Development Council's lease for the community cold storage property, and also for the 5 years, and then also including new language that, that allows processing as a permitted use. I have seen the benefits of that facility for many years. For the community's individual cold storage needs, things like private storage and for food and for bait, small businesses storage, they use it for their seasonal bulk supplies and groceries. Hunters and sport fishermen prepare to leave and take all their spoils with them, use the facility. Numerous small processors and fishing businesses use it for their self-marketing projects and business. And that was really the rationale for us to secure that grant and to build that facility. We really wanted to encourage a lot of self-marketing back in the day. This is 20 plus 25 years ago. So, but the key to all of it is that we have to have an anchor tenant that really is there and paying the bills and making sure that the lights stay on and all of these other things can happen. So the board recognizes that we need to be able to change with the times, and there was a processor that approached us and used it, and he became our anchor tenant, and it's been working well, but we need to address it into the lease. That's an allowable item. So otherwise, you know, I'm going to be before you giving you the bad news that we got to shut that place down. It just would not function unless we have somebody like Coastal Cold Storage in there. So just I'm proud of what PEDC has done and how we've owned and operated that to the best of our abilities on behalf of this community. And by changing with the needs, we continue to keep these doors open and encourage the future. So I'm going to take my kids and head home, but Steve's here and he's on the board, as well as Ro is here if you want any nerdy-gritty topics or you want to cover anything extra. Liz is still not with us, so she asked us to be here and just speak on behalf of that. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else who would like to talk about items related to tonight's agenda? Okay. Is there anybody on Zoom?
There's not.
All right, thank you. I'll move on to persons to be heard unrelated to tonight's agenda. Is there anybody that would like to talk about items unrelated to tonight's agenda? Please come forward, state your name, and you have 5 minutes.
Yeah, hi, Tom Kowalski, and I'm speaking for myself and a bunch of the residents that live around the Mill Road Tower. It's my understanding that we left it in a process of looking for an alternative site for the Mill Road Tower. And I appreciate all the efforts that have gone into that so far. There's a few of us that are still digging into some places that we can move this tower. The places that we've identified are still being vetted. And there's some questions that we're going to have to work through to help with the vetting process. One of them is, how much is it going to cost to move the tower? I don't think any figures were discussed. And then once we can identify a cost or a range, we can tackle some grants to pay for the relocation of that tower. And so I just wanted to bring that up. We're still working on it. You'll see some more in the future, but I'd appreciate a few thoughts on the matter. Maybe if we meet again next time, we might be able to discuss it a little bit more. And I have another thing I want to bring up, and that is that I understand we're hoping to add somebody in the community development department. And I highly recommend that in the job description that you include somebody that is a capable grant writer. I don't know the situation in our borough if we have a professional grant writer. I do understand we get grants and there are people that are able to write the grants, but if we're hiring a new position, and I think it would be very, very well served to have somebody who can write grants and likely write a grant, pay for their job. So I just want to leave you with that. But one other thing I do, I read somewhere a while back that there's a process for contesting your property values. And I noticed there's an article by John Murgis in the paper explaining that process. And I went through that process and going through it. And in the process, I realized that there may be more people who are going to want the same type of reduction in their assessment. Maybe not everybody fits the same situation. Maybe they're further away. Maybe they can't see it. I don't know. There's all kinds of factors that might go into that. But I do believe that the borough could possibly save some time if they were to come up with a range per distance away from the tower as kind of like a base to start with, so the residents can have some sort of expectation as to what they should be asking for when they do ask for a reduction in their assessment. So please consider that, and I appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else who'd like to talk to items unrelated to tonight's agenda? Is there anybody on Zoom?
No, there's no one.
Okay, thank you. Please come forward. I see one hand up. Please come forward, state your name and who you represent.
Hi, my name is Ayla Dupree, and my husband has been here to speak a couple times. We brought both of our children today so that I could attend. It did sound like maybe the Mill Road was kind of being tabled for whatever reason. Maybe we thought there was maybe a little bit less support for it. It does sound like there's grounds to get it moved and that there's potential to find funding to do that. And so being representatives of our community, you know, you guys represent us and you're supposed to be fighting this fight for us. And I'm hopeful that that is still in motion. There's a lot of room for it. There's also a lot of countries that have outside of the US that have a basis for this information. And even though it's not as popular in the lower 48, it's gaining traction. And I would hate for the city to be in a position where they're behind and held accountable, because there's been plenty of communication. And for whatever reason, I'm seeing quite a bit of pushover to the side where maybe it's not interesting certain members or certain people that are here representing the community, but it's a problem. And there's a lot of us that feel that way. And I haven't seen a lot of people here supporting it. So I'm a little bit confused as to why it's not being discussed more frequently. And if it turns out that we all need to show up, I guess we can arrange that. You know, my husband and I are looking at building a pretty substantial house on our property. And to be honest, investing that much money into a community that, one, is not listening to the problems that we're facing, but two, I don't want my view to be a cell phone tower. So there's a lot of ways that you can go about this issue: tourism, property values, health. There's a lot, you know, environmental impact. There's a lot of places where this is touching. And there's a lot of room for discussion. So I know that maybe we could open it up. There's a lot of people that have been doing a lot of work on this that I have not been a part of. I watch it and I kind of listen a little bit. But please don't table it, because we feel very passionately about it. And you have a lot of people backing it. We also, from day one, have decided that we will petition, you know, to lower our property tax. We've been waiting because we are hoping that you guys are able to kind of talk this out and come up with some kind of option that makes it so we don't have to go through all these other loopholes. There's no reason for it. We're a small community. We all work together, and the whole point is to come up with a solution that works for everybody. And I would expect that that thought process is being put in by every member that's representing us and that was elected to represent us. Work groups are great. There's a lot of room for it. Unfortunately, there is gaining to be a lot of traction, specifically in the lower 48, where if the community is at an impasse, they are, have gone to the courts and they have won. And that is by no means a threat, but we're growing a family here. We expect this community to thrive and grow. We want our generation to be able to start businesses and thrive and grow. A tourism, just from the tourism aspect, people pay a lot of money to visit this place because it is beautiful. I can tell you they do not want a cell phone tower between them and Devil's Thumb. I don't want a cell phone tower between my home that I'm raising my family in and Petersburg Mountain, okay? There's room for this discussion, and there's a lot of people that speak really well behind the scenes, and they want to inform you guys, and they want you to see where we're coming from. And if you can't, or for some reason it isn't maybe a priority to you, I hope that you will open your eyes, because it is a priority to a lot of us. Petersburg's aging. Let's try to keep businesses here, young families here, encourage people to build here. And that all comes down to representing your community and listening to them. And I hope that this is one of those things that you'll take the time to talk to us about further instead of tabling it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Anybody else that would like to talk about items unrelated to tonight's agenda? Okay, seeing and hearing none, I'm going to move on then. Tonight, there are no board commission and committee reports. Under the consent agenda, we don't have anything. Under the report of other officers, Petersburg Electrical Resilience and System Health presentation. Utility Director Harper has a presentation for us. Mr. Harper, you have the floor.
I just want to thank you for your time tonight. And the reason I'm going about this is in the 2 years I've been at Power and Light, I've fielded a lot of questions and heard a lot of misinformation of nobody's fault. I worked pretty close with Power and Light for years as an electrician, and I couldn't answer some of the stuff I'm going to talk about tonight. I just didn't know, so I don't, can't assume that everybody does, especially decision makers. So, so many of you know, but not all of us, that Petersburg works on a hydro-first operation principle. Our primary power comes from SEPA, 100% hydro, and we supplement that with our own hydro from Blind Slough. And the diesels, they stay offline under normal operating conditions, so. That is the status quo of every day. I've been asked, well, how many diesels do we run every day? And hopefully none. And real quick, the SEPA hydro system, we've got Swan Lake, which is dedicated to Ketchikan. And we have Tyee Lake, which is dedicated to Petersburg and Wrangell. Both of them are 24 megawatt output. And in between the two, we have the Swan Tyee Intertie. And what that enables us to do is Tyee has more water and energy 355 days of the year than we can use. So the excess gets sold to Ketchikan to help bring down the total cost of SEPA, because they're spreading that out amongst everybody. So it's a big asset for us. And this is just showing us the last 2 years, the daily loads of where we're at. The red line is Wrangell. The green is Petersburg. So you see, historically, we use more than Wrangell. In fact, they can't use any more than 10 megawatts right now because their transformer is maxed out at that. And the blue line is the total north end, meaning Petersburg and Wrangell. That's everything coming out of Tyee to us. And you see, this line here is where we typically will start peak shaving, well below the total capacity, because we got to be able to absorb swings and not take the whole system off. And the top line is that 24 megawatts. For the rest of the night, when I'm talking about SEPA, I'm going to talk about 12 megawatts, because that's our fair share out of Tyee. We We can see most of the year we have substantial room. It's just these winter months and a few days each winter month where we exceed the capacity we want to be at. So there's lots of room all summer long. So there's no, I've heard a couple people say, well, we're on the ragged edge, and that's just not an accurate statement. So, oh, and I wanted to mention that the last 2 years we had 6 days where we had to peak shave, and it would have been more if the community hadn't listened when we speak out and say we need to conserve power. That number would have been substantially more. So as I said, our current capacity outpaces our historical peak demand. So back in 2022, we hit 13.8 megawatts, and that we've hit twice since then. Last winter, we were seeing 13.5 quite often. And as you can see, SEPA has given us 12 megawatts, and we can generate about 2 megawatts at Blind Slough. So that puts us right on the cusp, and we don't want to sit there because we don't want to knock the whole system out of, because that would cost us a lot more diesel, restoring everything. So that goes to, if you look at our Petersburg backup, it's 13 megs, and then we have the 12 from SEPA, and the 2 from Blind Slough gives us a 27 megawatt total capacity. Obviously, we don't want to be running that 13 megawatts of diesel. And this is why we need the new Scow Bay generator. It's because of those peaks are at 13.8, and we only have 13 now. Yeah. So on those couple really, really cold days, there's just not enough generation if we were to lose SEPA. If something happened to the cable, if they went down for whatever reason, we'd have to make some choices of how we'd roll power. And then even with the new one, we're going to be right on the cusp. We'll be good, but it'd be like taking your boat out and run it to half a tank and running home. You just, this doesn't make sense. It's not safe. And this is just to go and tell you, yeah, SEPA is our primary, diesel is the backup. And the system is designed to give us minimal interruptions, meaning when SEPA goes down, we're gonna have that 2 hours usually that we have everybody back online. We could have it automatic, but we'd go from being the lowest kilowatt hour charge in Alaska to well above the average if we wanted it to automatically click on. So, and this is just looking at the last couple of years of how much diesel we did run. And these are actual hours in a day that one or more diesels ran. It was too hard to break it out in any other way other than to say during like 2025, 227 hours of the year, we had at least one diesel running. And that's less than 3% of the year. I thought that was a cool picture from 1927. I don't know who the people are. I'm sure somebody could figure it out. But this is a breakdown of last year's diesel hours. And you see that peak shaving only accounted for 23 hours of that. And that, when we're peak shaving, we're only running one diesel engine. And outages was another 23 hours. And that could be multiple or one. That isn't to say we only had 23 hours of outages. But typically, we can come back on with Tyee without running any diesel, or we might fire up one to help them smooth out the system as we're coming on. And there's other times where we have to run an hour or two outside of Tyee. And then training and maintenance was 75 hours. And that's probably going to be about where we're at this year again, just because we've had some turnover and needed to get some new operators trained. And then we have the lion's share is the SEPA shutdown, which is 106 hours. And that's an annual thing that we do every June. We talk about it. We put out PSAs to conserve. And what that's doing is SEPA splits up that time in June. They do the north half, which is us, and the south half, which is SWAN, which is Ketchikan. And they go through and PM transformers. They They clear power lines that are too dangerous to do when the system's on. So that's the lion's share, and that time is well invested. It keeps us pretty reliable. I mean, our reliability here in Petersburg is pretty outstanding. Let's just talk about the peak shaving again, and just kind of explain why. As we hit those sharp curves, those peaks during the day when it's really cold, it's usually only for an hour or two in the morning and maybe an hour or two at night when people are waking up and when people are getting home and cooking and getting ready for the night. So, and then this is pretty interesting. It shows the last 30 years of growth. From 1995 to now, we've grown 52% usage more. And that's a year-over-year average of about 1.54. That CAGR is just a way to look at it. It smooths out that line instead of going up and down. It's the difference between kind of like looking at averages and mean. Mean's a little more spot on. And then we look at the forecasted growth. If we keep going on the same trajectory, a really safe forecast is in the next 10 years, we'll see 23% more usage, and pretty confident we'll hit that 31%. And what's driving this, some of it is new homes, but not as much. Some of it's new businesses, but that's not the real driver either. The biggest driver is switching from oil to electric for heat. And if we look back at that last 2 years, you can see if you took this chart and just looked at the summer months, we'd be pretty flat, if not some periods of decline from changes in the economy here. So this is all heat driven. I forecasted it even farther out, but it loses a lot of accuracy for me because the model I'm using doesn't account for the fact in 2016, Southeast Alaska was already 50% off the diesel and onto electric. And I know in the 10 years since then, I wired a lot of heat pumps and boilers in town. So we're gonna hit a point where we level out pretty soon after this. So. So you can see we're right now, we have that 27 megawatts available to us, and that's with the generation. And by the end of 2027, we'll have 36.5 megawatts. So we're gonna gain both on hydro and diesel. And even with the projected growth that I showed you in the last slide, by the end of 2027, we should be able to say goodbye to peak shaving for at least 10 years. And if you go to the next slide, I can explain why real quick. So SEPA is working on Tai'i adding a third turbine, which should be, if it stays on schedule, in operation by the end of next year. And that will give our share of that 12 megawatts of 6. So that'll get that to us. And then Scow Bay 2, we're in the middle of the process of getting the second unit out there, which is 3.5 megawatt generator. So it'll give us the capacity to not have to do rolling blackouts on the coldest days of the year if we lose SEPA. So it's very key for our resiliency and keeping the community. But like I said, you have to remember what we talked about, we're gonna have to do another one after. That same principle of going halfway and have enough fuel back. Plus there's generators there that are as old as I am, and there's one that's as old as my parents. So they're well maintained and they run great, but things only last so long. So just quick recap. We're really stable. I know Power and Light is doing a great job of proactively managing it. SEPA is looking ahead and adding, there's probably in the next couple months, we'll be able to talk about another project that's gonna give us even more capacity on the north end. And the diesel serves as a contingency for us to keep the lights on. And our current reserves, we're really strong. I know we hear a lot of times from us, conserve, 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 but that's during the shutdown, and that's the 5 to 10 cold days of the year. Even today, we're only using between us and Durango 49% of the capacity Tyee has. So, and just going forward, we're going to keep increasing capacity and becoming more efficient. So that's what I have for you. If you have any questions.
Member Mucci?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great presentation. Can we go back and look at slide 20 or page 20? It talks about the SEPA hydro system overview. And it's just because I don't understand it. It's the one with the map of Southeast.
Oh, the second slide.
Yeah, second slide. That one right there. So you've got Swan Lake Hydro with two generators and 24 megawatts installed capacity. Mm-hmm. And you have Tyee Hydro with two generators and 24 megawatts. What's the difference in the 70,000? I know the difference, but why is there a difference between the 70,000 and the 130,000?
That I'd have to defer to Bob or Carl.
I can take a crack at that first, and then I'll turn it over to Carl. If you look at the area behind it, the water collection area, and the size of the dams. And so it's much bigger at Swan than it is at Tyee, one. And two, Tyee is much higher in elevation than is Swan. And so we also, another point there, I don't think he's talked about, is that it's still iced over when Swan's, you know, plumb ice free and ready to go. Carl, would you add to that, if any?
Mr. Mayor, I'd just add that you're absolutely right. It's the capacity of the lakes that caused that difference in the capacity.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Hey, Member Valentine.
Thank you. awesome. So we just purchased, you said, 3.5 megawatt generator, right, for Scout Bay. Mm-hmm. That puts us at 16 and a half, right?
Yeah.
And so when this new generator comes out at Swan Lake, we're going to be up to 18. Did I see that correctly?
Yeah.
Like of allowable.
Yeah, from SEPA, our fair share of that will be 18 megawatts.
Okay. So we won't need to continue buying more generators to match it, but like we should be matching no matter how big the capacity is?
No, we don't need to match.
Okay.
Tyee. What we need to match is our peak loads,
mm-hmm.
which right now is 13.8, and then looking at the growth of about 1.5% a year, that's going to continue to grow.
Plus, so it's not like if we get like 30 megawatts all of a sudden, that SEPA was like, we don't need to buy 100 hydro or, you know, generators to match
it. No, but enough okay.
To meet whatever our load is.
And it's kind of like running right now. If we,
right. It seems very even.
Full throttle.
Right. Okay. So. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you for the presentation. I'll move on here then to the mayor's report on this one. Under the mayor's report tonight, we have assembly meeting date reminder. The first April meeting has been rescheduled from April 6th to April 13th at noon due to the clerk's training in Anchorage. And both our clerks are going to be attending at that training. So we don't have anybody to back up, so we'll move it to the 13th. Board of Equalization hearing. The annual Board of Equalization hearing will be held on April 14th at noon to hear property assessment appeals. I know that the assessor we have will try to be resolving as many of the appeals as possible prior to, and so that anything that can't be resolved at that time will come forward to the Board of Equalization. And the assembly sets in this borough as the Board of Equalization. Under that, I'll be headed to Juneau tomorrow to meet with our state congressional delegation and others to discuss some issues. I'm going to wear two hats since I'm now chair of also of SEPA and of, you know, mayor here of the borough. I'll be wearing two hats, and I have a number of topics I'm going to cover up there. One of them has to do with we've been looking at resiliency of our grid. In other words, trying to keep it up as much as possible. And there's a number of projects on there ongoing. We had a $4 million grant towards that. And for some reason, it got cut to $2 million. And so I'm going to be trying to argue. One of the reasons they say they've cut us is because we are so efficient down here in the South. And but we don't have what they call power cost equalization. In the interior, through the legislature, they get power cost equalization. In other words, to their to their utilities and for their power, they get a subsidy from the state. We don't get that. And so I'm going to be arguing to put some of that money, back into place is one of the issues. Another one I want to talk about is the funding for the road, the main road into the proposed mental health subdivision, mental health trust subdivision out by Papke's, is that I understand that there's a, we had sent a letter earlier this year to the state asking them, you know, when mayor, when the former mayor and I were in Juneau, we thought we had a way forward, but it hasn't panned out. So I'm going to bring that issue back up to go with. Another issue I want to talk about is health transformation funding. We were able to talk last week with Representative Begich about the health transformation. And one of the things we'd like to see is to see some wording changes in the legislation itself that would allow some of that money to be spent for infrastructure, whether it be here or whether it be in interior Alaska in small parts. So I'm going to be talking some about that. And then I want to talk about, there's two bills before the legislature, House Bill 184 and Senate Bill 14. Both of them have to do with allowing private industry to fund, to get money from ADA to be able to build infrastructure in communities, except that local government's not into that legislation. And I have meetings with, also talking with ADA about that subject. And the last one, I have two other subjects. Is one is the senior benefit program, too, is that I'd like to bring it back to their attention that we still have people who have applied months ago for that, but we've not heard anything. And they also tell me that if they have questions, they can't find anybody in the state to answer those questions. So I intend to bring that up with our delegation when I talk to them. And with that, I'm going to move it on to the next part here. Title 19, rewrite, Communication Tower Ordinance Implementation and Plating Authority. Response to residents' requests for stronger regulation of cell tower locations, the Assembly voted unanimously to direct the borough manager and the economic development director to begin rewrite of Title 19 for borough-wide implementation, excluding the city of Kuprinoff. Revising Title 19 is a major project and is expected to take several years. As part of this rollout, a borough-wide communication tower ordinance will also be implemented. During this transition, property outside Service Area 1 will be placed in a temporary holding district, allowing all uses except for communication towers. Any proposed tower in these areas will require a conditional use permit. In addition, with the Title 19 rollout, I requested that the borough staff begin the steps necessary for the borough to adopt plating authority and to take it over from the state. Plating authority is already in place within Service Area 1. This process would then extend it borough-wide. This decision will involve additional costs. During the fiscal year 2027 budget process, the Assembly will evaluate the administrative expenses associated with implementing Title 19 across the entire borough. And that's all I have for right now. Member Mucci.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the report, Mr. Mayor. Regarding the Board of Equalization hearing, if the assessor and the property owners can't come to a resolution of an appeal and it goes to the Board of Equalization and the property owner isn't happy with the decision that the Board of Equalization makes, what is the property owner's next step, or what are their other options that property owners might have if they're not happy with the decision that the Board of Equalization makes? Thank you.
We'd like to manage through the mayor. I'll try to answer that. I believe it's district court. We can confirm that with Jody and the assessor.
Yes, and I concur with you. That's district court.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, to the manager's report, if you will.
Yes, sir. So Dawson Construction, speaking of our Scout Bay number 2 generator, has achieved 65% design on the project and is working to provide a cost estimate at the same level. Power and Light would like to thank Steve Obrachta of Temsco for flying one of our crews to reset the overvelocity valve at the dam on March 9th after it tripped during a system restart. Steve's flight skills in trying conditions were excellent as usual, and he saved the day on March 9th. Thank you. Power and Light crews have been busy with snow removal, like most of our departments, and ensuring critical access to facilities and system switches. We really need to remind the public, this is across the board, not just Power and Light, but to not pile snow in front of things like fire hydrants and electrical infrastructure. It makes it very difficult to get the power back up if power goes down and there's snow covering everything or any of the other pieces of our infrastructure. So we encourage people to make sure you don't pile snow on those in front of those things. Due to this past year's unusually wet weather patterns, Crystal Lake has remained consistently at a high level, allowing the Blind Slough hydro plant to operate at relatively high outputs for this time of year. Based on our observations, we believe current lake levels may be the highest we've ever seen in March. Library has received an $8,750 grant from First Bank and the Federal Home Loan Bank of Des Moines for the 2026 summer reading program. Thanks to both of those organizations. Library has an open request for proposals for janitorial services beginning April 1st, 2026. Deadline for submissions is Tuesday, March 17th at 4 p.m. Details are on the borough website. Liz is working on turning the Planning Commission's recommendation into an amendment to Title 19 for the Communications Tower Ordinance. Our attorney and Liz hope to have it ready for the first meeting in April. These provisions will then already be incorporated into Title 19 when it's applied area-wide. Not sure about that, and Liz is still trying to help her mom out and whether she's going to have time to work on it. I can't answer that yet. That's the plan. We received an application to lease property at Thomas Bay by Brett Martin. He won the Forest Service timber contract, so would like some property to set up operations. The only issues that would is that he would like to construct a bunkhouse, which would mean people are residing there. This could potentially grant them a vote on whether the borough can create a service area. Our original plan was not to allow anybody out there until we actually form a service area for that area so that all the rules are set before anybody moves in. So we'll work through that. Since we lost our plumber in town and Ketchikan Mechanical is not planning to return until May, we can't plumb in the trench drains at the cold storage. Liz has asked DEC to grant another provisional permit. Marv did have a new larger drain opening installed in the processing area as recommended by DEC. We're also trying to work with Ketchikan Mechanical to find out if they could come back earlier. They're gonna be doing the project at the Aquatic Center, so they may be making trips. Street staff continues to manage snow removal operations in response to ongoing winter conditions. Big congratulations to Martin Odegaard, our streets foreman, who marked 20 years of service in the streets departments on March 9th. Our new motor pool apprentice has been training on preventative maintenance tasks and assisting with snow removal and equipment repairs. Additionally, we had to send Unit 22 out, was loaded onto the ferry and sent to Juneau for warranty work. Building maintenance team repaired the police department garage door and is waiting parts needed to complete the library sidewalk repair. Staff are also keeping up with snow-related maintenance needs. The wastewater department supervisor conducted a facility tour of the wastewater plant, providing an overview of the current processes. Supervisor also discussed anticipated requirements to the upcoming pre-treatment facility. The team reviewed the HDR engineering 60% design plans for the outfall repair, and the plans are expected to be confirmed for construction and ready for the bid by the 20th of March. Congratulations to our water department. ARWA recently recognized Petersburg with the Alaska Water System of the Year Award, highlighting our strong compliance record and overall operations performance. So congratulations to those folks. And calls and emails continuing to come in for summer harbor activity. It looks like we're gonna have a good amount of traffic in the harbors this summer. So that's it, unless there's questions.
Questions for the manager? Okay. Hearing none, I'll move on here.